Morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Nehemiah Perek Yud Gimel, the 13th and last chapter of the book of Nehemiah. This is a remarkable sefer. We should remember this is also essentially the last historical moment in Tanakh, in Ksuvim. This is beyond Direi Yomim, so we should try to appreciate this. At this point in time, Nehemiah has established incredible achievements. He has set up the walls of Yerushalayim, he set up protections, he's created a spiritual revolution, people have signed in and onto his document of acceptance of the rules of the Torah, he set up the Mishmaros. We think at the end, what could be better, what could happen? Unfortunately, the last perek talks about how Nehemiah sees that things slip very fast. Things change very fast. We're going to look at it, this perek, which are the enactments, the decrees of Nehemiah, which are to close the holes of a number of gaps which have been emerging. The first is going to be in Psukim Aleph to Tes about a certain degree of assimilation which is rife. He describes that on a certain day, he decides that he wants to read the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu to the people. Once again, remember, beforehand, who he had read the Torah of this Moshe, this ancient Torah to the people, and that it created a spiritual revolution. Here, he reads the Sefer Torah again, but he reads specifically the parts in Sefer Devarim, which talks about how an Ammoni and a Moavi cannot ever be included in the community of Hashem, for the reason was that in the nation of Israel in the desert, were rejected by them. These are brothers and sisters from the tribes of Lot. This is part of the family, the Abrahamic family, and they did not bring us water and supply us in the desert. Therefore, a male Ammonim and Moavim cannot enter into our community. As they read this, they decided they're going to take away all assimilations from Israel, specifically from this camp. And he notes, and the reason why, obviously, this is all set up is because in front of him is Eliashiv the Kohen, who has a specific lishka, has a room in the Beis HaMikdash, and he dedicates it to Tovia. He was related to Tovia. And he sees that in fact, people would come to this and give honor to Tovia in his room. And this was all in Yerushalayim at the time, after the year, in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes. He had returned to Persia, and he now asks to return to Yerushalayim, and this is what he sees happening. He describes his shock at this, and he throws all the vessels of Tovia out, and he empties the room of Tovia. Just to understand a few basic things over here, what's going on. First of all, this whole reading of the Torah is obviously the pretext to this action. The reason why he's reading the Torah is because somehow an Ammoni and a Moavi have entered the community of God. So let's understand who the players are. Who is Tovia? Tovia, if you remember, is in fact a non-Jew. He is a powerful fellow who comes from Ammon. He is an Ammonite. And what has happened is that we now hear that he has a relationship with Eliashiv. Eliashiv, in fact, is the Kohen Gadol, although Nehemiah removes the appellation Gadol. He removes the appellation Kohen Gadol. He just sees him as just simply a Kohen because of the way that he's behaving. We know that in Nehemiah's absence, it seems that Nehemiah, after his tenure, he comes in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, is recessed back to Persia in the 32nd year, and it sounds like he requests to have another tour of Yerushalayim. He returned to duty in Yerushalayim, and upon his return, this is what he sees happening. It seems that in his absence, Rav Schwab argues, that the people are concerned about their security and they start fraternizing with their neighbors in order to be able to create security and to avoid reprisals from those inhabitants around Yerushalayim. One such thing we already see happening early on, we already see in the sixth parak, that in fact Tovia had really intermarried. He had what's called Baalei Shavua. He had many people who were part of his group who were offering him information from Nehemiah during Nehemiah's stay. And in fact, he was married into the family of Yohanan. Yohanan, this family of Shechaniah, was married into the family of Tovia, and this is one of the people who was already involved with building the wall, was married into the family of Tovia. This is how far it had gone. And Eliashiv, in order to be able to do this, Eliashiv, although being the Kohen Gadol, was giving him a room in the Beis HaMikdash as an honor to Tovia. This was creating this, so to speak, the security alliance, and Nehemiah was not having this. He comes in there, he reads the Torah, he points out this is against the Torah, and he throws him out right then. We next move into the next enactment, and that is in Psukim Yud to Yudalid. In this section, he now looks at the stock houses, and he notices that they're empty. There are no maasros. There are not enough tithes going to the Levim, and as a result, vayivrchu ish lesodeyu, that people went back to their fields, which means that the Levim, being as they had no work, explains the Malbim. They weren't being supported, could not stand in their positions in the Beis Hamikdash and the gates as they should be, and they had to go work to be able to put bread on the table because people weren't giving giving the necessary maaser. This again is the second time we're seeing a break in the amana, in the agreement that everybody had agreed to and signed upon. That the shvua that Nehemiah had made already take first was intermarriage, and second now is giving the requisite tithes to the Levium. So what he does is he forcibly establishes offices and he reestablishes the process of giving the Trumas and Maestros in order to be able to ensure the Beis Hashem is supported. Then we get into the third decree that he makes, because he sees that unfortunately that people were using their presses on Shabbos. They were bringing all kinds of laden merchandise to Yerushalayim, and the marketplace was open on Yerushalayim, and there were peddlers coming and people were selling things in Yerushalayim all day long. And he turns to people and he says, how in the world can you do this? You mechalalim es yom ha-shabbos. And he describes how when your ancestors did this, that was when Hashem brought punishment upon you. And so what does he do? Is he closes the gates of Yerushalayim the entire time of Shabbos, and he does not allow anybody in. And he describes how, Nehemiah describes how the Rochlim, these peddlers, would come to the gates and beg to come in a few times. And he said to them, listen, if you don't go away, I'm going to send out my armed forces to reprise you, to send you away. And that's what he did. So he was able to reestablish this. And in each of the end of these paragraphs, he says, Zachra Elohim L'tova, remember me for the good, for all what I've done. Now, just to clarify, if you read the Pesukim carefully, some of the very clear transgressions of Shabbos that he describes are Mir La'akum, asking non-Jews to perform a lachavu, a Jew on Shabbos, Mekach u'memkar, which is business on Shabbos, and Tchum Shabbos, the boundaries beyond which we should not be walking on Shabbos, and Shavizas behemtoy, and allowing non-Jews to use one's animal on Shabbos. Now, technically speaking, these aren't the greatest of infringements. These aren't the melachas midaraisa, but the Ramban explains that when the Torah says that Shabbos should be a Shabbos on a day of rest, included in that meant to be actually framing it as a day of rest, which meant that what the Torah had meant to do, although it gave us 39 basic building blocks as to what Shabbos, we'll call it the parameters as to what it should be, there was also a notion of it being a day of rest. And the Ramban describes famously in Parashas Emor, in Perek Chof Gimel Chof Dalet of Vayikra, he describes how you could technically have an entire marketplace operating, no writing happening, which is a melacha, but, you know, business as usual, people, non-Jews, performing all the melachas for the Jews, and being able to have a full commerce and a regular day of the week on Shabbos. And that's why Chachamim added all these ideas, Amir la'akom, all these extra ideas, mekach u'memkar, all these gezeiros and takonos, because they were, in a certain sense, upholding what Shabbos should look like, not the technical is it aser only because it's a melacha, but the extension of what Shabbos should look like is what's being described over here, Shabboson. That's very worthwhile thinking about when it comes to our days as well. People say, you know, Rabbi, what's the problem with the cell phone in the end of the day? Well, first of all, there's three different options to what the problem is, but it's also getting to the end goal, which is Shabboson, which is the idea of it being a day of rest, and that's what Nehemiah was ensuring right here, because clearly that had been lost. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos Kufchav Gimel Mabez tells us that this was the initial creation of the halachas of Muktzah. What he did was he realized that people were doing all kinds of things with their vessels, so he made Isurim, he made prohibitions about moving vessels. This is where the initial stage of Muktzah happened, and in fact he was very, very strong about this. He actually prohibited moving almost any vessel except for a few ones, and he retracted some of these gezeiros, some of these takanas later on when he saw that people were shaping up and understanding what Shabbos should truly be. Then we move on to the fourth level again, and this comes back to intermarriage, and he describes in those days as he returns to Yerushalayim, he sees that many Jews had married women from Ashdod Yois, that's in the sort of the Gaza area, Amon Yois, Moav Yois. This is not just the Tovia episode beforehand, and he says, in fact, they were so assimilated that their children, B'nayim, Chatzim Medaber Ashdodis, Ve'enam Akir Medaber Yehudis. They speak, in fact, the lingua franca of Ashdod more than they speak even Hebrew. And they're more assimilated in identity than they are, in fact, Jewish. And so, listen to this pasuk. He says, V'ariv imam, I fought with them. V'akalaleim, and I cursed them. V'akemahem, and I beat them. I mean, it's incredible what he says. And he says, I pulled out their hair, and I forced them to take an oath that they will not, based on Hashem's Torah, that they should not intermarry. And he goes to his very forceful operation where he separates people based on, and he said, do you know that even Shlomo HaMelech married non-Jewish women? Even him, and the Mefarshim explain that if Shlomo HaMelech, the greatest king of all Israel, he sinned because of it. Don't think that you can do it and not sin. This, of course, is the beginning of the building, the second Beis Hamikdash. That was the beginning of the building, the first Beis Hamikdash. And it soured because of that, in fact. The kingdom split because of that. And so therefore he's saying this is the same thing over here. And he describes how even the the son of El Yashiv, who was the Kohen Gadol, was the Chassan, the son Balat Acharoni, was married to a non-Jew. V'avrichehu me'olah. I chased him out. Nehemiah wasn't standing for any of this as well. It just wanted to understand how central this is. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, in the first Perek Halacha Dalet, explains that the reason why Anshei Knesset Agdola, meaning to say under Nehemiah's leadership, formulated the Siddur as we have it. Why did Anshei Knesset Agdola create a fixed text? Was because of this pasuk, because of this idea that people were so fragmented in their Jewish culture, nobody was on the same page. People were not able to organically arrive at the same and correct words to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, they formulated one fixed text. This was as a function of what Nehemiah was seeing in his age. It's worthwhile, Rabbi Chaim Angel points out, to contrast the reaction about intermarriage that Ezra has and Nehemiah. When it came to Ezra, Ezra sat in a fast day. He was so pained by the experience, he started pulling out his own hair. When you look at Nehemiah, what does Nehemiah do? Nehemiah pulls out the hair of those who are intermarrying. He is so forceful. These are two different models of leadership. Ezra is noticed because he's going through so much pain and people change organically. Nehemiah doesn't wait for that. Nehemiah goes out there and he beats these people up. How could you? And this is the way he seeks power. Perhaps both models are necessary as well. Finally, we read the last of the three psukim, Chav Tes to Lamed Aleph, and in this section here, we hear about how he asks Hashem to be remembered for the good, how he establishes all the Matnas Kohen, the Matnas Leviyah, all these different gifts that were supposed to be brought to the Kohanim, the Leviyim, the Bikurim, and the bringing of the woods for the Beis HaMikdash, and he says, Zachra li Eloi Kale Tov Hashem, please remember me for good for all he did. And we, as we know beforehand, the book is not called by his name because perhaps he was too much seeking his own remembrance, even though he did do many things, maybe perhaps also because he threw aspersions on the earlier generations in the way that he described how good he was as opposed to his predecessors. But nonetheless, this is a very, very powerful moment in time. It's worthwhile noting, as the Ralbag closes the Sefer, he says that he learns lessons, to'alot, from every Sefer. And he says the 24th thing that we learn from the Sefer is lefarsem, to publicize, ma shaya ba'ela pu'ulois sh'asa Nehemiah, to see the actions that Nehemiah did, mea shlemos va'atov, from completion and good, ki hu ishlim b'nei Yerushalayim, he completed Jerusalem, ba'zeref ana nifla shekodem asher haya ba'boy, mea chasidus va'atov, ma shaloha li'elam, ve'emid avodas beis ha-migdash ba'ofen shaloi ba'derech, shaloi tishakacha avoda. He established the Beis HaMikdash in a way that it should not be forgotten, the Avodah should not be forgotten. He set up for posterity the ability to be able to go forward even in his absence. And therefore he comes back, even after he's gone, to reestablish what people had very quickly transgressed and slipped back into the mire. This is the important transition. This book of Nehemiah, this chapter specifically, is the transition between the ages of the prophets and the ages of the wise, the ages of the Chachamim. Because now it's going to be an Anshei Knesset Agdola formulating regulations and halacha as opposed to just prophecy, because when prophecy ebbs away, this is when we need systems of regulations in halacha, and this is the emergence now of what we'll call rabbinic Judaism. With this, we close the book of Nehemiah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.